This week on Weather Brains, unraveling some of the secrets of severe thunderstorms. Hello, I'm David Black on behalf of the Weather Company from Birmingham, Alabama. This is episode number 6 for Weather Brains, the podcast that's all about weather, put together by a bunch of weather geeks like James Spann, chief meteorologist for ABC 3340 Television in Birmingham, Alabama. Hello, Mr. Spann.
Hey, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing superb, and I know that you have gone to a very interesting weather conference along with J.B. Elliott, who's also with us for this show. And we've also got Bill Murray on board. Bill, tell us where you are joining us from for this podcast.
Joining you from beautiful Benton Harbor, Michigan.
My goodness.
I had not even heard of it as of a week ago, I guess. But I'm here now.
We have people all over the country to put this podcast together.
You know, when I think of Benton Harbor, Michigan, when I was a young amateur radio operator, way back when I was like 14 or 15 years old, I bought Heathkit radio gear, and they made those in Benton Harbor, Michigan. So I always think of Heathkit stuff.
Well, if you need me to pick up anything for you tomorrow, let me know, James, and I'll get it before we head back to the South Bend Airport.
I think they closed it down, so it's no longer in operation, but that was some good stuff.
Yeah, the times have changed.
Yeah, the only thing I remember is a weather story in the calendar, I think, about a bad accident that happened out here during a lake effect snowstorm, because I understand this is really the snow belt here on I-94. I think they had a 100-car accident about 2 years ago that was pretty devastating. So I think they get their share of snow here.
I think in the months of like December and January, those of us who live in the South are glad we're in the South, where it might be cold in the South, but it's not cold compared to where you are right now, Bill. Anyway, James, you and J.B. Elliott, and I don't know who all else, took part in a very interesting weather-related event the weekend of March 3rd in eastern Mississippi for severe storm education and awareness. Tell me about that, and let me just let you guys kind of carry the train and tell me what happened.
Funny, because
hang on here. We got an explosion.
What the fuck is it?
I think Bill Murray is talking about Heathkits.
Hold on, Bill.
Sounds like Bill's playing the harmonica there, doesn't it, JB?
Yeah. What about Scannonball?
Earth to Bill. Let's try you again.
You know, Bill's in one of those Commodore 64 dial-up connections, I think.
I thought you gave him the Weather Brains charge card to fix that. Did you not?
Well, yeah, maybe he upgraded from a VIC-20 to a Commodore 64, or maybe a TRS-80, you know? I mean, I don't know.
Well, we send him books, buy him books, send him to school. I'll tell you what.
I don't know. But, yeah, we had a great time, David. This is the time of the year where there are many, many excellent weather conferences around the country. There are some that are held in various places. I know the National Severe Weather Workshop was this past weekend in Norman, Oklahoma. I've attended that before and had the chance to speak at that before. But this year, we went to the lovely village of Starkville, Mississippi, on the campus of Mississippi State University for the 5th Annual Southeast Severe Storms Symposium that's sponsored by the folks at Mississippi State. And it's kind of gotten to be a tradition for our gang. JB and I have been there for 5 years in a row since it started. And what's interesting in that this is really a regional conference geared towards southeastern United States severe weather events. So we gather a lot of information out of that conference that we can use and apply to severe weather outbreaks where we are here in the Deep South. And I think that's the way the regional conferences ought to be. You know, if you go to a conference in Minnesota, you ought to be getting information about storms up there. So it was great. And one of the highlights, David, is always watching J.B. Elliott eat donuts at this thing. I mean, this guy can suck those things down. It's unbelievable.
There had been some predictions, James, about, what was it, 15 donuts or something along those lines?
Well, you know, we had a crisis. We got in there for the first time in the history of this event. They didn't have donuts. They had these little pastry things out there. So thanks to Mike Brown of the MSU faculty, he got us some donuts, and also Jason Simpson of our television staff brought some donuts in. So JB got a chance to knock some down Saturday.
He brought those donuts all the way over from Tuscaloosa, but I used extreme resistance to eating too many donuts. I only had 4 the whole weekend.
And you see, I knew that this was going to be an issue, so I put some pictures on the blog. If you go to abc3340.com and go to weather and then click on blog, and there's a calendar there. That's the great thing about these blogs. Go back to March the 4th. You'll find some photos of JB in action eating at that thing. So just keep your arms and legs away from his mouth. That's what we've learned.
The harsh side of meteorologists.
But a lot of that was propaganda.
Okay.
Pictures don't lie.
Okay, back to the conference now, though. James, this conference, I'm already getting the impression, is really valuable just because it focuses on climatology and stuff that happens in this part of the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've learned a long time ago, to be successful in this business, you really need to keep learning. One of the things as I get older is the fact that I understand now how much we don't know about mesoscale processes that lead to severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. Some of the speakers included Dr. Harold Brooks of the National Severe Storms Lab. He did a great presentation on global severe thunderstorm activity. John Davies, who's one of the great storm chasers and severe weather experts in the country, he had some case studies on outbreaks in the Great Plains and here in the Southeast. And Alan Girard of the National Weather Service in Jackson, I think you guys touched on this in last week's podcast when we were out, the comparison of Tornado Alley in the Great Plains versus Dixie Alley in the Deep South. Fascinating paper about, the point of Alan's paper was not to try and say that Dixie Alley is really the Tornado Alley. They both have, different, characteristics and different outbreak types, but that was very good, and just some other good information we could use. So I'm delighted to attend that every year. We learn a lot, and there's a broadcaster's workshop on Friday each year, and that was great fun as well. We had Bernie Reno of AccuWeather down this year. Nolan Davis of WKRN Television in Nashville was there. I spoke. JB spoke. So it's just a great conference, and if you want to learn more, make plans to go next year.
Did JB talk about donuts or severe weather?
JB talked about a hodgepodge of stuff and really not very excellent information. I really focused my short speech and showed some pictures also of how far we have come technology-wise in the National Weather Service. Showed some pictures from back in the 50s and 60s about the technology that we had, like little or no radar, and only one satellite machine finally came in the 70s. And we had virtually no weather models back in those days, and we really had to fly by the seat of our pants back in the 50s, 60s, and early 70s. And also about the Smithfield tornado that moved across the northwest side of Birmingham in April 1977 and killed about 23 people. And we had just a vague amount of radar at that time, but we did have warnings in effect before the tornado struck. And that was the only time, I believe, that we've ever went live on NOAA Weather Radio, was during that tornado. For about 20 minutes, we went live while it was still on the ground. But technology today, for example, if I were to get back in the National Weather Service, if that were possible — it's not possible, of course — but if it were, I would have to take extensive retraining.
I don't know, man. You're pretty sharp the way you are.
Hey, yeah, no, JB did a great program, David. He showed some slides of Weather Service operations back in the 70s, and I think for all of us, and of course, I clearly remember that generation. I was doing weather in the late 70s, but I think for the young students and the younger people there, it was just great to see him reminiscing some stories about those great events like the super outbreak in 1974. So JB just did a great job.
James, when you guys come off of one of these conferences, do you come out with new information you really try to keep in mind in forecasting or anticipating severe weather? For example, do you have a new set of parameters do you look at, or do you just have to be kind of cautious about what's presented at these things in terms of their real accuracy in the real world?
Well, some of the information, David, is kind of hypothetical and just a thesis or an idea. Some of that stuff is pretty good. There was a young man named Justin Jackson, who is from Tuscaloosa, who did a research paper, part of his thesis, on severe weather parameters and how they relate to tornado types across the Deep South. And his stuff was very good and very practical. Really, one of the conclusions was the fact that within the severe weather parameters, when we look to forecast tornado types, one great indicator is the EHI, the Energy Helicity Index. Another great one is the 0 to 1 kilometer storm relative helicity. And on the other hand, You know, there were parameters that didn't work out that well, that, that did not correlate, like 0 to 3 kilometer cape, things like that. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff you can apply. And as we look at this event this week here, we've got a potential event Thursday and Thursday night. That's the kind of stuff that's very helpful to us.
And Justin went through the whole presentation without stuttering and wrapped it up with a good summary at the end very precisely. It was very, very good. One of the better ones.
Well, speaking of the severe weather threat, what do you guys see for the southeastern states, the southern states, in the next couple of days?
JB, go ahead.
From what I can tell from looking at some late models earlier tonight and from models in the middle of the day and this morning, it looks like the main weather threat for north and central Alabama will be later in the day Thursday and Thursday night. It's going to be a widespread severe weather outbreak, I believe, in the plains and south central U.S., with the main tornado damage further west than Alabama, maybe in Louisiana, Mississippi, West Tennessee, and up into Kentucky. But still a chance of some tornadoes here, but I believe our main problem is going to be a long line of intense thunderstorms that will sweep southeastward across the area Thursday night, and there may be quite a few reports of wind damage. Even away from the thunderstorms, southwest winds are frequently going to be gusting at 40 miles an hour, and that can even bring down a few trees, especially the weaker trees.
Yeah, I think this will be the first major threat, at least, of the spring season, David, of the March, April, May severe weather season. And as always, you have a lot of questions and you rarely ever have all the answers until the thing actually unfolds. And as we do this podcast, we're still a couple of days from that. But I think JB's exactly right. We could very well see some significant tornadoes west of here during the day Thursday. And I would not be shocked if we had a moderate risk from SPC out there for that region, and maybe even a moderate risk into Alabama because of the coverage of the widespread wind damage. And, you know, that's another thing we need to point out. You know, tornadoes, that's the sexy stuff. You know, everybody likes to talk about those, and you get really excited about it. Very few people get excited about squall lines and damaging straight-line winds, but those things can create some real problems and can be a real threat to human life. We've had a lot of these big derecho-type events and squall-line events with widespread wind damage, and I have some concern this might be one of those things Thursday night, so we'll sure be on our toes watching for that.
And David, I wanted to add one more thing about the conference over at Starkville. I'm agree with James entirely that you never get too old to learn something about the weather in this business. I've been in the weather business for seemingly a whole century, at least 40-something years, and I try to learn something new every day. I plan to learn something new tomorrow. I need it.
It sounds like it's a fascinating couple of days of information. I bet it would probably be over my head, but I know it would be very interesting to check out nonetheless. Bill Murray, you've got something on for us.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, these conferences are some of the best things you can do if you want to learn about the weather. And I know we have people that are listening to us from all over the country now on the, you know, on Weather Brains. And this Saturday is one of the most important ones in the country. The TESA, the Texas Severe Storms Association, has their annual Texas Storm Conference Saturday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Colleyville Center in Colleyville, Texas. I'm sure, James, you know where that is. And they have an extremely impressive list of presenters, including Gary Woodall from the National Weather Service out there in Fort Worth. He'll be doing his Super Storm Spotter training session. Tim Marshall's going to actually talk about Hurricane Katrina. Dr. Charles Doswell will be there talking about chasing safely. And probably the man who made chasing actually into what it is, a guy named David Hoadley. He's going to be highlighting 50 years as a pioneer storm chaser, and he's an amazing man. So if you're in the Dallas area on Saturday, this event's totally free, and it makes for a great day if you want to learn more about severe storms.
Are you going, Bill?
Well, I was supposed to, JB, but I've been on the road so much lately that I'm actually going to stay home and enjoy some time this weekend with my family.
How many frequent flyer miles do you rack up, Bill?
Oh, you know, if I put them all in one airline, I could probably, you know, fly to the moon and back. But, you know, since I, you know, try to always fly the most, you know, the most expedient or the least expensive route, I don't end up with too many on one airline, unfortunately.
Okay. And for dating purposes, too, we want to make sure folks realize that saying Saturday, we're talking about March 11th, correct, Bill?
That's exactly right. March the 11th. You can go to the TESA website, which is www.tessa.org, and you'll see everything you need to see right there.
And Bill, you've traveled to another interesting part of the country. We talked about this on our previous podcast last week, you had occasion to do some business on the Mississippi Gulf Coast recently, and it sounds as if that was a very eye-opening experience. Want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was a very eye-opening experience. Arriving there and really looking, you know, you come off of Interstate 10, you see some billboards down, some trees down, you know, blue tarps on some of the roofs, you know, but everything looks fairly normal. You go down I-110 into Biloxi, and you know, you see more blue tarps, and you see more things.
Bill's playing the harmonica again.
I tell you, we buy him books, we send him to school, and this happens.
When you come off on Highway 90, back to where the...
Sound like one of those Star Wars characters now.
Well, this is the fun of the internet. This happens sometimes. Hello, Bill. Let's try to bring you back in, Bill.
Bill is probably stealing somebody's Wi-Fi connection or something there.
No.
Probably parked outside of Starbucks up there in Benton Harbor or something.
I think it's time to upgrade from that Commodore 64, honestly.
Hey, I think he's on the moon.
We're going to get Bill one of these high-speed things here.
We should probably get...
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, you're a little bit better. Bill, we were talking. We need to get you off that Commodore 64.
Two.
I heard him say three.
One. Maybe. Hello.
Okay, we got you now, I think, Bill. Try it again. Go back about three or four sentences. Hello, Bill.
I think Bill is beamed up for the evening.
Hello,
yeah,
Bill.
I think we're going to have to give up on Bill. He's beamed up. He's probably sitting out there in front of some Starbucks using a Wi-Fi hotspot or something. I know what it is. You know, he's got one of these Slingbox things sucking all the bandwidth. You know, that deal where you can watch your television
video
from your home on your laptop and control your TiVo box and all that. So
he's a technological guy. I'm not surprised at that at all.
He's sucking all that bandwidth on that Slingbox thing, and he hadn't got anything left for the internet conversation here.
He had and I don't know the details, but he had what sounds like a really moving experience, James, when he was spending that time on the Mississippi coast. I've not been down there, but I've talked to a couple of people who have, and you probably have stories like this too, James or JB. This stuff is not in the news so much anymore. You know, the news is on to everything else, but the storm damage and the cleanup down there is still just an awesome, immense task that's just taking a tremendous human effort. So I want to hear what he has to say.
My son Steve with the Birmingham Fire Department Heavy Rescue Unit spent an entire week in Gulfport, and he can tell you some stories that will amaze you.
Yeah, and one of the presenters, David, at the Southeast Severe Storm Symposium was a guy named Nolan Davis, who's a meteorologist with the ABC affiliate in Nashville, and his parents happened to live real close to that levee breach on that 17th Street Canal, and he went down and had, you know, shared a lot of pictures and had some really good details of how that whole thing really happened. And I have not seen any of it. I don't believe in being a tourist. And, you know, if I'm going down there, I'm going down there for a reason to do something good. But I would imagine it is still quite a mess, especially in Mississippi. And it's just going to take a long time. And, you know, David, hurricane season is June 1st. It's hard to believe, but it's not that far away.
That's true. And I just wonder how long it's going to take some of the people to build their lives back, especially folks who are modest in their means and who really did get wiped out, particularly in Mississippi. You know, a lot of areas there have people who don't make a lot of money, had very, very modest homes. And
a group from our church pretty soon is going down and spend a week helping the First Baptist Church in New Orleans in some repair work.
And that's probably one of a lot of cases of great need down there. So, it's hard to imagine living where we are, not on the immediate coast, to understand what those people lost down there and what it's likely going to take to rebuild. So I just, you know, like I say, I wonder how long it's really going to take for some folks, maybe years.
And I'll tell you one thing, you know, Ivan, in 2004, I went down a month after that to the Alabama Gulf Coast to do a 60-minute special live on television down there. And the thing I remember, and of course the Gulf Coast was hit so hard, but the inland communities, and they don't get any publicity up into the southwest part of Alabama, places like Monroeville and Camden, and they were just hit so hard by Ivan, and they're still recovering, and here we are in 2006, been almost 2 years now. So, yeah, the power of these tropical systems is absolutely amazing, and it's something I think we all need to remember as forecasters. It's easy to get excited about this stuff and, you know, get into the computer models and the forecasting element, but we have to remember the human impact. It is indeed a very big deal.
Absolutely, and I believe there will be plenty to do 10 years from now.
Hello, Bill Murray, are you there?
Yeah, let's go to the landline. Isn't that terrible?
Now well, his cell phone doesn't work.
Yeah, your cell phone doesn't sound that good, Bill. Talk to us a little bit here. He must be in the middle of nowhere.
You know, he says he's in Benton Harbor, Michigan. I think he's at the North Pole.
Hello, Bill.
We're going to have to get him one of those satellite connections like they have, you know, for Fox and CNN over there in Iraq.
One more time. Hey, Bill, can you hear us? I was thinking, surely to goodness, a landline would work. But I guess if he's on a cell phone, we still got the same problem.
Yeah, we'll strap a GPS on his ankle and see where he really is next time.
Yeah, that could be embarrassing. Hello, Bill. He's gone. Anyway, I thought it was a shot to try and get him, but we just may have to apologize to our podcast listeners who were wanting to hear Bill's story about being on the Mississippi coast, and I guess we'll just have to say we'll delay that again for another week when we can get a better connection with Bill. But anyway, I guess we can jump back to the conference if you want, James. Do you have any other thoughts that you want to share with people? And one question that I would throw your way is, does the conference in some little way maybe boost our ability to anticipate severe weather?
Well, I think it does. Information is powerful, and a lot of folks have done some excellent research, and sharing that information helps us all. And every single year I've been to any conference, any weather conference, I always pick up some very good, useful information from that. And I think we can certainly look at this past weekend as a good example. And I've certainly applied some of that knowledge to looking at this potential event coming up here later this week, Thursday and Thursday night. But I really think out of everything, the most interesting look was really this thing from Alan Girard concerning Dixie Alley and Tornado Alley. And I know that Bill Murray talked about this on the show last week, but the bottom line is that Tornado Alley, your traditional Tornado Alley, Oklahoma, Kansas, places like that, they have more F0, F1 tornadoes. But when you get up into these F4 and F5 tornadoes, the numbers are almost dead even between the two. And if you look at killer tornadoes, tornadoes that result in the loss of human life, Dixie Alley by far has more of those. And perhaps that has something to do with population distribution. We have a little more population here, but there's no doubt per square mile we have more strong, violent, killer tornadoes here than compared to Tornado Alley, which is interesting. Now, the media, you know, they like the Tornado Alley out there because you can see them. Around here, they're wrapped in rain. We have hills and trees, but both parts of the country are very, very tornado-prone. And my gut feeling is that it's going to be an active spring. JB, what do you think?
I think so, too, and I have long believed that the recent 5 or 6 years that we've had the maximum danger in the autumn season, the more tornadoes, the more damaging tornadoes, and more fatalities in November and early December down in the southeast, especially here in Alabama, I think that's an aberration. I believe over the long haul that we will absolutely have more tornadoes in the spring season than in the fall.
That also can lead to some safety problems in that many parts of the country have not had a bad spring, including Tornado Alley out there in the Plain States in years, and people become complacent. You know, you don't have a tornado in 6 or 7 years, you don't worry about it. And I hope it doesn't take one of these big F4, F5s with major loss of life to wake everybody up. It's been quiet for a long, long time.
As I mentioned on some previous times, when we have a major tornado, like in the 70s, we had a series of very powerful tornadoes. The Centerville Brent tornado, which James is very familiar with because he did some amateur radio work down there. And on May 27th, 1973, the town was nervous for 3, 4, or 5 years afterwards when it would thunder. People would start calling. And especially after the Smithville tornado in 1977 across northwest Birmingham, so close into the metropolitan area, anytime it thundered after that, for several years, more calls than usual.
James, you go speak with groups all across north and central Alabama all the time talking about severe weather. Do you feel as if people are taking it more seriously these days, or are you worried about complacency because it's been so long since we had a really monster tornado come through a populated area?
I kind of gauge how people react to severe weather by the amount of hate mail you get during the times you have to go on television, and we haven't had that many. Most of our long-form television coverage has been involving tropical systems here in recent years. But it just seems like now you go on and you cut off. I can even cut off an infomercial for Ginzu knives, and you know you've got 50 people saying get off television. Nobody cares about these warnings. You're overblowing it. Blah 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 blah. And that kind of stuff suggested, I think, that we're probably going to have a rude wake-up call. I'm afraid a lot of people are going to be caught off guard. Now, having said that, I do agree there are way too many tornado warnings. And maybe that's another subject for another day. We've got a problem with false alarm ratio. But we've got to get people back in the mode of thinking that this is tornado season. This can be serious. Do I have a weather radio? Do I have a way of getting the warning? Do I have a plan at my house? Where do we go? Do the children understand? And if I live in a trailer, do I have a place to go? All those questions have to be answered on a nice sunny day, not when you got a tornado five blocks away.
Well, let me ask you this. With the pounding that you get sometimes from people angry about interrupting programming, isn't that really going to change with the advent of the digital television era?
Oh, yeah. All that's going to change with technology. And the truth is, you know, you get, you know, 10 or 20 nasty email messages, but we know that you've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that are counting on you to be there. So we never let, you know, some nasty email messages determine our policy. And this is a very aggressive, severe weather market, and that the way it works here, if there's any county in our market under a tornado warning, we go on the air and stay on the air. But times are indeed changing, David. Now with the digital transmission we have, not only do we have the big high-definition stream, we have multiple standard-definition streams. So once we get all those other streams on cable and satellite, then we'll just put the weather coverage on one and put the regular programming on the other. And the other thing I'm excited about, David, it's the Internet and how we reach people during severe weather there. Not only with our streaming coverage, we stream our television coverage live on the Internet so people can watch that, but also with the blog and things like that, where JB and Bill Murray and those folks are typing in information. And JB, don't you think the blog has really become a tremendous asset in our arsenal of disseminating severe weather information?
It has exploded far beyond any dreams that I had that it would, because we have readers from all over the United States. I believe you sent out some information recently that we had readers from all 50 states and a number of foreign countries, including numerous readers from some states like Illinois.
Well, that's a wonderful technology, so I know you guys are going to continue to work hard at keeping that so active and such a good source of information. Speaking of information, JB, I think you got email from a listener to our podcast from last week when we were talking about buying weather radios and programming them to capture warnings for particular counties.
Yeah, boy, I sure want to clarify that. I made the mistake of mentioning, well, I still encourage people to not only program in their local county, but at least one county upstream to the west of them so they can have some extra warning time. But I forgot temporarily that the Birmingham transmitter, KIH-54, National Weather Service Radio, does not broadcast warnings for Tuscaloosa County since Tuscaloosa has its own weather radio. They do broadcast warnings with alarms for Walker County, but that will prevent people in Jefferson County from getting a county upstream like Tuscaloosa County. And I also mentioned Shelby County. It would be good to program Tuscaloosa County also for Shelby County, since the tornadoes will be approaching from that direction most of the time. But that's not possible with the current system, because Birmingham does not broadcast tornado warnings for Tuscaloosa County.
Is that just a policy, the way things work within the Weather Service, why they do it that way?
I suppose so.
Okay, maybe another question sometime for James, if we ever can get somebody with the National Weather Service to join us for one of our podcasts.
We're going to work on that. Maybe we can get somebody with one of the offices here in the southeastern states. Of course, we got some great folks here in Birmingham. Jim Stefkovich is the MIC. Alan Girard over in Jackson. Jim Bellis in Memphis. They're just some really good folks that are involved here in the southeastern states. So we'll see if we can get one of these guys on the podcast with us in future weeks, and we can talk about a lot of issues. And I would really want to explore more on this false alarm ratio. And understand, when I mention this, it is not pointing a finger at anybody within the National Weather Service. I think it's pointing a finger at all of us in the weather community with all of this explosion of information we have now about thunderstorms with NEXRAD data. I just think we pulled the trigger too often with warnings. And sure enough, you cry wolf too much and nobody's going to listen. There's no doubt about that. And I just have great fear that the tornado warnings might go the way of severe thunderstorm warnings, where the truth is many people don't do anything when they hear a severe thunderstorm warning. People are beginning to get that way with these tornado warnings, and I hope that never happens. One of the things I would like to see is a formal tornado emergency message within the Weather Service structure, and that means you've got a tornado down and somebody's looking at it, or there's been damage in the last few minutes, and that would kind of be the most urgent message out there. But we'll talk about that and get some folks on here from the Weather Service with us.
Sounds like a good plan. I'd like to hear more about that. And we talked about email a second ago. Let me issue just a quick little reminder here for folks. We really enjoy hearing from our listeners, and we've been getting some pretty interesting responses to our podcasts already. And if you'd like to contact us, our address via email is question@weatherbrains.com. Again, question@weatherbrains.com. We would love to hear from you. Guys, I think that can take care of everything we've got for this podcast. James, any other unfinished business, or are we ready to call it a wrap?
Well, you know, as we speak, we've got storms blowing up out there over Enid, Oklahoma, and places like that. So I'm going to get over here to the radar and take a look at it. It will be very interesting to see what we have to talk about next week. I think this pattern is fascinating. March is just a fascinating month, and we're looking at the first major early season severe weather setup this week, and I think next week we just might have another one, another severe weather opportunity, and then some cold air might be involved in a major late season cold snap, and I just think next week's going to be fascinating. So we'll have a lot to talk about in terms of weather, and we'll talk about what happened with the deal this week, and we'll see how the forecast verifies.
I think March is one of the most interesting months of the year for weather people.
Well, I hope we're able to get through it, too, without any damage or people being hurt, too. Always kind of keep my fingers crossed about that. But you never know in the South, do you?
Absolutely not.
All right, guys. We've enjoyed it a lot. We will try to bring Bill Murray back in for our next podcast to tell us about his experiences along the Gulf Coast, specifically in southern Mississippi. That should be a very interesting story that we will look forward to. Again, we appreciate having you listen to us, and hope that we'll hear from you. We will see you next time. Weather Brains is copyright 2006 by The Weather Company, Birmingham, Alabama. For J.B. Elliott and James Spann, I'm David Black. Thanks for listening. See you next time.